This episode of Hitch to Homicide deals with the subject of rape. Listener discretion is advised.
From 1990 until 1994, a man in Charlotte, North Carolina, preyed on women, raping and strangling his victims. He would go unnoticed by the police for years, choosing these women from people he knew, people he'd worked with at a fast food restaurant, and their friends. He was looking for money to fuel his drug habit, but before leaving his victims, he would rape and use what he called the Boston choke to murder. This is the story of Henry Lewis Wallace, the Taco Bell Strangler. Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for all of our friends down in Portugal, bem-vindo, bem-vindo, bem-vindo.
I bet it's warm there.
I bet it is.
It's the middle of August. It's warm everywhere.
It is.
That's why people start going to church.
Got that dog days of summer.
If this is what hell feels like, I better get my butt in the pew at church.
Well, if it's not hell, at least we can see it from there.
It's true. Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to like, rate, review. You can subscribe to the podcast on any podcast platform out there. And you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Yes.
We're really having so much fun with that. And if you're only a listener and not a watcher, you guys are two separate groups, but we love you equally.
Yes.
It's like children.
Yes.
You're different, but we love you the same.
Yes.
You can also join our closed Facebook group if you want to be around those crime, true crime, like-minded people.
Yep.
And from these people came this case. A lot of requests for this case came in.
Okay.
And so I put it on the list, and then I would get another tick next to it and another tick next to it. So I'm going to cover it today.
I'm really bummed because I love Taco
Bell. It's not even Taco Tuesday.
I know.
It's Taco Wednesday today. But this is a frustrating case. Everyone's going to be really frustrated by the end of this. I'm just going to tell you now.
Okay.
Before we get started, let me thank some sources. The Supreme Court of North Carolina, Find a Grave, Murderpedia, The Charlotte Observer, Wikipedia, and the Big Book of Serial Killers.
Oh, okay. Well, you ready?
I am.
All right, let's do it.
Henry Lewis Wallace was born on November 4th, 1965, in Barnwell, South Carolina, to a poor, unwed mother, Lottie Mae Wallace.
Okay.
He was the product of an affair between Lottie Mae and a school teacher.
I love the fact that all Southerners have two names.
Lottie Mae.
Lottie Mae.
Lottie Mae.
Yeah.
Henry never knew his dad. His childhood home had no indoor plumbing or electricity. His mother was a harsh disciplinarian, and Henry was constantly criticized for every little thing. Mm. And she would sometimes force her son and her daughter to beat each other with a switch.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I thought about that. Now, if my parents had said, you and your sister for punishment, I'd have been in trouble. Because as you might imagine, I was the mischievous one.
Yeah, there you go.
But his mother and sister would dress him as a little girl and parade him around the neighborhood. And Henry, according to his psychiatrist, witnessed a gang rape at the age of 7.
Oh, my gosh.
So not the best upbringing, right?
Yeah, you think?
He's got some childhood trauma.
Wow.
Henry bounced from high school to high school. He was the only male cheerleader at one of them where he was on the squad.
Okay.
And he attended multiple colleges until 1985. I guess he just couldn't find a place.
Yeah.
He took a job as a disc jockey at a local radio station where he called himself the Night Rider.
Ooh, baby. The Hoff.
The Hasselhoff. Hoff.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, this Knight Rider was caught stealing records and promptly fired.
Mm.
Then later in 1985, he joined the Navy. And before he embarked on his career, Henry married his high school sweetheart, Marietta Brabham.
Okay.
Now, while Henry's in the Navy, he starts using drugs. Mm. And he began committing burglaries in Bremerton, Washington, Washington State.
Right.
Henry was arrested in January of 1988 for burglary, where he tried to steal a VCR, a television set, and a microwave from a hardware store.
That's something I haven't heard of in a long time.
A hardware store?
No, a VCR.
Oh. Well, it's 1988.
Exactly. And how many of our parents could never program the thing?
It just flashed 12
exactly.
All the time.
Yep. Every time I go over to my mom's house and the VCR was in there. It was flashing.
Everybody knows.
Mom, let me set this up for you. I'd come back.
Flashing 12.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Then in June of 1988, just 6 months later, he pled guilty to second-degree burglary and was sentenced to 38 days in jail, 2 years of supervised probation, which he never showed up for. He was dismissed from the Navy at the end of 1988. And they allowed him to be honorably discharged.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even with all that going on.
Wow.
And it made me think, I wonder if they just didn't want bad PR, right?
Yeah.
In May of 1986, Henry, now a military vet, starts working as a chemical operator for Sandoz Chemical Company.
Okay.
In March of 1990, back in Barnwell, South Carolina, Henry sees Tashonda, she goes by Sean, Bethia.
Okay.
Sean was an 18-year-old high school senior in Barnwell when Henry first noticed her. Henry and Sean's mothers worked together at the same factory and were friends. Henry had a crush on Sean, and Sean's roommate was a friend of Henry's.
Okay.
Sean's friends told police that the very last person they ever saw her with was Henry.
Henry.
Sean would be reported missing in March of 1990, and then a month later in April, some guys who are fishing find her lifeless body in a lake.
Hmm.
She had been raped and strangled.
Yeah, wow.
Then a day after Sean's body is found, Henry is charged with attempted rape of a 16-year-old girl named Eartha Brown.
Hmm.
And according to Eartha, Henry invited her to go for a ride with him when the person he came to see at her house wasn't there. This is kind of an MO of his. It's like, it's a somebody, I know somebody who knows somebody.
Gotcha.
He's like, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sort of thing here.
6 degrees of Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's the 6 degrees of Taco. It really is the 6 degrees of Taco Bell, right?
Thank you. Thank you.
But he shows up and Eartha is like, no, the person you're looking for isn't here. And he says, hey, why don't you go for a ride with me? And he takes her to some Allendale nightclubs. She's 16, where he bought her beer and then asked if she wanted a television.
What?
Do you want a television?
That's random.
Then he took her. Well, not if you hear the rest of it.
Okay.
Then he took her to the Rainbow Motel, where he registered under a phony name and said they could steal the television set from the room.
Okay.
And when she asked if she could go to the restroom, she wants to go to the bathroom, she comes out and he starts choking her.
Hmm.
He throws her on the bed and begins to undress her. When she resisted, he pointed a gun at her head and said, quote, I'm going to kill you.
Wow.
End
wow.
quote. But she just kept screaming. She was screaming so much that he stopped what he was doing, put her back in the car, and took her home to her mother.
Oh, wow. Good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, after this run-in with the police over this 16-year-old Eartha, the police question him about Sean, but no charges are brought because there's not enough evidence to prove he murdered her, even though everybody's saying this guy who attempted to rape the 16-year-old is the last person that was seen with her.
Right.
So what you're going to see is that the police kept getting clue after clue after clue.
Hmm.
And it's all connected. And they're going, I don't see the, where's the connection?
Yeah, we need a little more.
I can't find the connection. So you're all going to see the connection today while we go through this. And it's going to really make you angry.
We need more. And in fact, we just need Sean to come in and tell us that.
Oh, he's going to come in plenty. Just wait.
Okay.
Just wait. But they don't have enough evidence to say that he murdered her, even though it looks pretty daggone hinky. Mm-hmm. It's all hinky.
Okay.
Henry won't do any jail time for the attempted rape of Eartha. Instead, he is put into a program that is for first-time nonviolent offenders. Well, maybe in the state of North Carolina, but he was in Washington and never showed up for his probation meetings.
Yeah.
In October of 1990, he loses his job at Sandoz Chemical Company. He also loses his wife because soon after, Marietta left Henry. She divorces him.
Okay.
Smartest move she ever made in her life.
The luckiest move.
Yeah. In early 1991, Henry moves in with his sister in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
I know where Rock Hill is.
Well, we know where all these places are. Charlotte, Rock Hill. Yeah. Then on February 20th and 21st in 1991 in Allendale and Barnwell counties in South Carolina, Henry is charged with larceny and third-degree burglary after breaking into Barnwell High School and a radio station, WDOG. I bet it's the dog. WDOG, the dog.
WDOG, the dog.
Yep, there you go. That's so good, honey. He served 4 months in the state prison in Allendale and was released on probation for at least 3 years. I mean, it worked so well the first time, right? Let's just put him on probation again.
He'll learn.
And despite his many parole violations, his probation is never going to be revoked. Never. In November 1991, when he's out on probation, Henry moved back in with his mother and sister in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I wonder where in Charlotte.
East Charlotte. Lived in East Charlotte.
Okay.
Henry's life in Charlotte was really unstable. He was fired from several different restaurants, but ended up eventually being a manager at a Taco Bell in what is now the defunct Eastland Mall.
Oh, wow. I know that very well.
Rob knows exactly where we're talking about.
Wow.
But what I couldn't get over was he was fired from several different restaurants, but he ends up being
the manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Eastland Mall didn't have the best reputation.
Clearly not.
Wow. Now, let me ask, just so I know time frame, what year was this again?
This is 1991, 1992 to through 94.
Yeah.
Wow. You were there.
Yeah, I sure was. Yeah, even visited the Eastland Mall.
You probably got yourself a taco.
I may have even seen him.
From the Taco Bell Strangler.
Wow.
On February 25th, 1992, while in Rock Hill, he kidnapped and raped 17-year-old Kieber Lewis at gunpoint. After he's caught, he's released on his own recognizance. Henry, at this point, is smoking crack. A lot of crack cocaine.
Yeah.
He got one of his girlfriends pregnant in December of 1992. One of his girlfriends. I don't know how many he had.
Yeah.
But it was during this time that Henry crossed the line from burglary and drug use and attempted rape to serial murder.
Oh, wow.
May 27th, 1992, Henry picked up Sharon Layette Nance. Sharon was born on November 19th, 1959. She's a native of North Carolina. Sharon is also a sex worker and a known drug dealer. When it came time to pay her for her services, Henry beat her to death.
Oh, wow.
And then he dumped her body by the railroad tracks where she was found a few days later.
Jeez.
The next month, on June 19th, 1992, Wallace let himself into his girlfriend, not the one that's pregnant, but into his girlfriend Sadie McKnight's apartment using a key he had taken from her. So she didn't give him the key. He took this key.
Wow.
And his girlfriend Sadie shared the apartment with Caroline Love. What a great name.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Caroline Love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Sadie and Caroline, they both worked at a local restaurant. They worked at Bojangles. And I'm sorry if you're in a part of the country or the world where they don't have Bojangles. Bless your heart.
I know. And the way they say it down in North Carolina, they say Bojangles.
Yeah, the Bojangles.
That's it.
Yeah, it's the Bojangles. And it is really really good chicken.
Oh, yeah. I had a Bojangles right up the street from my house, and I used to go down there all the time and get me some chicken.
And the biscuits are pretty good, too.
Put a little honey on them biscuits.
So now that we've had this PSA for Bojangles.
Yeah, so Bojangles, if you want to send me any certificates or coupons.
Rob wants free Bojangles, y'all.
I want some Bojangles.
There you go.
Let me say it again. Bojangles.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sadie and Caroline work at this Bojangles together. And Caroline is born on July 17th, 1971. She's a native of Charlotte and had been a Bojangles cashier for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
She attended Garinger High School and studied nursing at Central Piedmont Community College.
Oh, yeah.
She was a strong athlete, and she ran track at Northeast Junior High. And she is Sadie's lovely roommate.
Okay.
Now, neither is home when Henry lets himself in, but Caroline returned first. And when she does, Henry kisses her on the cheek. And Caroline says to Henry, "Don't do that anymore. And if you promise not to do it again, I won't tell Sadie about it."
Hmm.
And Henry replied by putting her in a chokehold.
Wow.
He later described to police as, quote, "the Boston choke," end quote.
Wow.
He strangles her until she is barely conscious. Then he dragged her into the bedroom, removed her clothes, and raped her while continuing to apply this chokehold. So she would come in and out of consciousness.
Hmm.
When Caroline began to struggle during the rape, Henry reached for the nearest object, which was a curling iron, and he choked her to death with its cord.
Hmm. Gee whiz.
Henry wrapped Caroline's corpse in her bed sheets, stuffed her into a large orange garbage bag, and dragged her out to his car, and no one was the wiser. No one. He went back into the apartment and grabbed a roll of quarters and locked the door. He's looking for money, but all he sees is a roll of quarters.
Well, and two, I mean, depending on where you are in the city, though, if you saw somebody, you know, pulling a trash bag out or whatever, I mean, you wouldn't automatically think there's a dead body in there.
Well, everybody who listens to this podcast thinks there's a dead body in there.
True.
Because we talk about it all the time.
That's true.
In the In-Laws and Outlaws in our closed Facebook group. Everyone's like, "That's a dead body. I think my neighbor has a dead body." Just like I always say to you, I think there's a guy that we see. I think he's got somebody in his freezer.
Well, I got to admit, though, since we've been doing this, every time I see a bag laying on the side of the highway.
Yes, you think it's a dead body.
Yeah.
And he didn't even put it in a black trash bag. He puts it in a bright orange trash bag.
Hey, look at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then he drove to Charlotte's city limits and dumped Caroline's body in a ditch.
Hmm.
Now, Sadie McKnight returned to her apartment that night and was contacted by Kathy Love, Caroline's sister. And Kathy wanted to know if Sadie had seen Caroline because the supervisor at Bojangles called and said, "She's Mr. Shift."
Hmm.
And Sadie didn't know where her roommate was. And suddenly she realizes it's really unusual that Caroline has not checked in with me.
Sure, yeah.
So Sadie and Kathy, her sister, eventually go to the Charlotte Mecklenburg police station and file a missing persons report. They were accompanied by none other than Sadie's boyfriend, Henry Wallace.
Wow.
So he's murdered her and he goes with them to the police to file the missing persons report.
Amazing.
Investigators thought that Caroline's apartment showed suspicious signs. Furniture that was disrupted like there'd been a scuffle.
Right.
Missing bed sheets. Remember, he wrapped her up in those. And a missing roll of quarters sold to her by her supervisor so Caroline could do
her laundry.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Caroline's laundry hamper was completely full, so she had not gone out to do the laundry.
Mm.
And the quarters are missing.
Right.
But the investigation ends there.
Really?
There's no interview with Henry that's recorded in the investigation, and Caroline is declared a missing person. Henry went back to the spot where he had dumped Caroline's body 2 days later. He described her body as being, quote, "decayed to the point where she just looked like leather, an E.T. doll or something," end quote.
Oh, man.
He returned a third time and found only bones. And now that she didn't have a roommate, Sadie moved in with her boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
Henry.
Wow.
Caroline's body won't be found and identified for another 2 years.
Wow.
7 months pass. Henry continues to live with Sadie. But on the afternoon of February 17, 1993, Henry paid a visit to Shauna Hawk, a teenager who had just returned from community college. Shauna Denise Hawk was born on December 2, 1972. She was the second child and only daughter of Dee Sumter and Walter Hawk II.
Okay.
Shauna went to community college in the morning and worked at Taco Bell at night, nice. Paying her own way through school.
Oh, good for her.
Shauna wanted to be a paralegal. And she gets home and she is slipping off her coat when she hears the doorbell. It's her manager at the door.
Okay.
Her manager from Taco Bell, Henry Wallace.
Ooh.
And according to court records, Shauna let Henry in right away, and these two chat for about an hour.
Hmm.
Now, Henry did not seem to have a problem gaining the trust of women who knew him.
Okay.
He was very nice. He was very personable, and he would joke with people. Everybody felt fine around him. They didn't think that there was anything weird about him. It didn't seem like the hair on the back of anybody's neck stood up when they were around him, okay?
He was charming.
He was. Yeah. It's sort of like a Ted Bundy feeling, right?
Right.
So feeling relaxed around him, Shauna, according to Henry's confession, didn't hesitate to tease Henry when he described how he had been fighting with his girlfriend, Sadie.
Hmm.
And as he's leaving, Wallace hugged her and told her that he wanted to have sex with her.
Wow.
And according to Henry's confession, she reluctantly agreed. I want to stop there. This is Henry's confession.
Okay.
Shauna's not around to tell us what really happened.
Yeah, yeah. Reluctantly agreed.
So I don't know if, I doubt that she agreed.
Yeah.
Leading her into the bedroom, Henry told Shauna to remove her clothes. She was afraid. She began to cry. Does this sound like somebody who was willingly going into the bedroom?
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't stop him from having sex with her. She cried throughout the entire rape.
Hmm.
Now, this is Henry's story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Afterwards, Henry told her to get dressed and took her into the bathroom. And then Henry put her in the same Boston chokehold he used on Caroline Love.
Wow.
And soon, Shauna was unconscious. Then he ran a bath, put her body into it, went upstairs, took $50 out of her purse, and left. Shauna Hawk's body was found by her boyfriend and her mother. The autopsy revealed that the cause of death had been ligature strangulation by an object wrapped around the neck and used to compress the throat. He's using a towel.
Hmm.
The investigating officers interviewed coworkers,
right.
Friends, and classmates, turning up nothing.
Right.
To which I say, really?
Yeah.
Really? Because Henry has a rap sheet for attempted rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 4 months after Henry murdered Shauna, on June 22, 1993, he paid a visit to another young woman who had worked with him at Taco Bell. Her name is Audrey Spain. Audrey is 24 years old and had just returned from vacation. Audrey Ann Spain was born on August 18, 1968, and was the daughter of Broughton Spain and May Helen Johnson.
Okay.
Again, he's able to charm his way into her apartment with his laid-back attitude and his smooth talking.
Hmm.
Spain, whose parents called her Baby, came to Charlotte from a small town in South Carolina hoping to work with computers. And she wound up at Taco Bell where she worked alongside Henry Wallace.
Hmm.
Now, Henry's drug use was getting worse by now. And crack ain't cheap.
Yeah, right.
He thought Audrey would have access to the safe at Taco Bell. But isn't he the manager?
Yeah, I was going to say, why would she have access?
Yeah, do they not trust him? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay.
So he rolls a joint, and Henry chatted with her, and they both got high. And Baby let her guard down a little bit by a little bit.
Right.
And when they were done, He threw her to the ground and demanded the combination of the safe at Taco Bell. And she's like, I don't know it.
Yeah.
And he asked her about her personal account. And she says, I just got back from vacation. There's no money in my account.
Yeah.
So now Henry's just frustrated. He's angry.
Right.
And he puts the Boston choke on her. He dragged her into the bedroom and he raped her.
Jeez.
According to Henry's confession, she came to during the rape. Audrey was frightened and begged him not to hurt her. He continued to rape her and then ordered her to get dressed. When Audrey turned her back, he put the choke on her again. And as she lay unconscious, he tied a nightgown and a shirt into a makeshift rope and strangled her to death.
Wow.
He put Audrey's body in the shower, washed any evidence off of it, and then put her body on the bed. On his way out, he stole her credit card.
Well, that was stupid.
You'd think.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you're going to be very frustrated.
Okay.
Now, the similarities between the Hawk and Spain murders are striking. Both victims are young, black, beautiful women who are killed in their homes. Both worked at the same Taco Bell for a time. Both victims were killed by ligature strangulation. Both victims were robbed of an insignificant amount of money. The murderer washed off both of these bodies. Both homes showed no sign of forced entry, indicating the victims knew their murderer.
Right. Yeah.
But the Charlotte-Mecklenburg County Police aren't making the connection. They don't make that connection.
They're waiting for him to come in.
How? I don't know. But they aren't.
Yeah.
And this case is considered unsolved. Now, the police apparently came to the conclusion that, quote, the killer's modus operandi did not follow a set pattern, to which I say, bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much more do you need to follow?
How much do you need?
Yeah.
Yeah. These women even look alike.
Yeah.
They've let someone into their house. They all worked at Taco Bell. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
6 weeks pass. Henry keeps to his pattern. He went to the home of Valencia Jumper, a friend of his sister's. Valencia Michelle Jumper was born on May 10, 1972 in Columbia, South Carolina. She was a senior at Johnson C. Smith University in Charlotte studying political science. She worked at the Food Lion on Central Avenue and at Hex in South Park Mall.
Oh, wow. I know exactly where both of us are.
I know you do. That was your side of town.
Yeah, yeah.
On August 9th, a friend of Valencia's, Zachary Douglas, spoke with her on the phone about meeting up later that night. But before Douglas comes over, Henry shows up. He again talked his way in, telling Valencia that he needed to talk to somebody about a fight he had had with his girlfriend, Sadie. After talking for a while, he suggested that Valencia call Sadie and tell her where you are. And when she turned her back, Henry choked her, dragging her to the bedroom and raped her. Then he choked her to death with a towel. And this is where Henry's methods take a turn.
Okay.
According to his confession, he soaked Valencia's body in rum. There was a bottle of rum sitting out in the kitchen.
What?
Then he put some pork and beans on the stove and turned it on high. Then he took the battery out of her smoke detector, struck a match, lit her body on fire, and walked out.
Holy cow.
Now, before leaving, he took some jewelry from her body, which he later pawned. Henry will say that Valencia was like a little sister to him and that they had often spent time together. And she was a good friend to Henry's sister.
Jeez.
So Douglas, the guy she's supposed to be meeting with that night, he shows up at Valencia's apartment. It's in the early morning hours of August 10th, so after midnight.
Right.
And he sees smoke coming from her apartment. He's going to testify that he turned the doorknob and the door was unlocked. So he tries to go in, but he can't get in very far because the apartment is filled with smoke.
Okay.
So he goes to a neighbor next door and they call the fire department.
Right.
As firefighters arrive on the scene, firefighter Dennis Arnie enters the kitchen and notices that a burner is on, the stove had been left on, and based on examinations at the fire scene, the information provided by firefighters and the observed pattern that the fire traveled, the investigators believe the fire originated from a pot left on a burning stove in the kitchen.
Okay.
But firefighters found Valencia's body in the bedroom of her apartment.
Right.
Now, on August 10th, 1993, Dr. Sullivan performed an autopsy on Valencia's body, and her body is extensively burned. It's very charred.
Right.
But Dr. Sullivan was told that the fire was thought to have been accidentally caused by this pot of beans left burning on the stove. And he says,
No. Yeah.
There's no smoke in her lungs. There's no soot in her airway. There's no significant inhalation of smoke during the fire.
Right.
She's dead before the fire starts.
Right.
It won't be until after Henry Wallace confesses that Dr. Sullivan will reexamine Valencia Jumper, her autopsy, mm-hmm. and amend the cause of death because he had ruled it as undetermined.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what police say is, I mean, it's a lot of, well, you know, finger pointing.
Right, right.
Police are saying, well, if we'd had a more in-depth, you know, autopsy, it would have prompted a more thorough investigation,
yeah.
which may have shown that Valencia Jumper's true cause of death was ligature strangulation, and we might have associated it with these other cases.
Right.
Now, a police investigation may have revealed the removal of the smoke detector battery and the presence of rum on her body. As it stood, the case was considered isolated despite the similarities of this victim to three other recent victims.
Jeez.
And Sullivan's comment upon finding out his error a year later,
yeah.
like after he realizes this, right. he says, quote, it was just a bad judgment call, end quote.
My bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
My bad. 5 weeks passed. On September 15th, 1993, Henry Wallace dropped in on Michelle Stinson, a friend of his from Taco Bell. Hmm. Michelle was 20 years old and had two sons, ages 1 and 3. She was studying at Central Piedmont Community College to become a graphic artist. Mm. And after talking for a little bit, Henry, according to his confession, gave her a hug and told her he wanted to have sex with her. She should take off her clothes. Michelle told him, I'm sick. I'm not having sex with you. I'm sick.
Okay.
So Henry demands to see the medication she's taking for this so-called, quote, illness.
What?
And Michelle couldn't find any medication, so Henry raped her on the kitchen floor.
Jeez.
Then he put the Boston choke on her, but decided for some reason to run to the bathroom for a towel, and he attempted to finish the job with this towel.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, however, continued to moan and gasp for air. Henry then stabbed her 4 times in the back with a kitchen knife. Using a washcloth, he wiped his fingerprints from the glass, the phone, because the phone's ripped from the walls for reasons we don't know.
Okay.
But he wipes his fingerprints from that, the right. door, the wall, the floor. And at some point, Michelle's 3-year-old son wakes up. He wanders into the kitchen, and Henry tells him to go back to bed.
Mm.
Then fleeing the apartment, Henry throws the knife and washcloth over a fence near the back of her apartment. Her 2 children discovered their mother's body. When a visiting friend knocked on the door, the 3-year-old told him that their mother was sleeping on the kitchen floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad.
So he couldn't get this Boston choke on her fast enough. So he goes to get a towel, comes back. She's fighting him. So he gives up on the Boston choke and just decides to stab her.
Hmm.
Now, the medical examiner again, Dr. Sullivan, determined that Michelle Stinson died from stab wounds with ligature strangulation as a contributing cause. It is not known if the investigation conducted by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department established that Henry Wallace was a friend of Stinson, although it's common knowledge. They worked together.
Yeah.
It did ascertain that she frequently ate at the Taco Bell where Henry worked, but still, the police do not make a connection.
Good grief. Listen, I'm not a smart man, but
I know what murder is.
Yeah. Gee whiz.
At this point, there had been 5 deaths or disappearances in the past 15 months, all within a 5-mile radius inside East Charlotte.
There's no connection here, though.
Nope. It's a predominantly Black community. They are very frightened. They are very angry, as should they be.
Sure.
Black residents accused City Hall of a lackadaisical attitude toward the problems of their whole community.
Yeah.
And they were being lackadaisical about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The police department held an emergency press conference. Hours before the conference, the department appointed Sergeant Gary McFadden as lead investigator.
Okay.
McFadden had no previous involvement with any of the cases in East Charlotte, but McFadden is a Black man.
Okay.
So 3 things happened in the fall and winter of 1993 and 1994 that may have kept Henry from continuing his killing spree. In response to the Black community's indignation, the police increased patrols in East Charlotte.
Okay.
So they'd see him walking around.
Yeah.
So he's being a little more careful.
Right.
A second factor was that 3 months after raping and murdering Michelle Stinson, Henry fathered a baby girl, although not by his girlfriend, Sadie McKnight.
Uh-oh.
So it's taking up a little bit of his time because he's a father now.
Right.
Then on February 4th, he was arrested for shoplifting a $49 sweater at Eastland Mall. Mm. He was booked, given a court date, and released. He did not turn up for that court date, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. But there's no record of an attempt to apprehend him.
Wow.
So he's got an arrest warrant, but they're not out looking for him.
Sure.
And you'd have to think at this point that Henry is feeling pretty invincible.
Yeah.
They're not putting 2 and 2 together.
Yep.
And they've arrested him and let him go.
Yeah.
And honestly, it seems like they're not giving him a second thought.
Right.
So maybe that's what spurred this next spree of murders.
Okay.
Or possibly it was his drug addiction that was fueling these murders.
Okay.
Because whatever the reason, Henry is about to ramp up his killing spree.
Wow.
Henry Wallace turned East Charlotte into a terror zone for a month. Mm. 2 weeks pass. The pattern was familiar by now. Wallace was jonesing hard for crack but had no money. On February 20th, 1994, Henry Wallace called on Vanessa Mack, the sister of one of his employees at Taco Bell.
Okay.
Vanessa Little Mack was born on July 1st, 1969 in Charlotte. She's 24 years old and the mother of 2 little girls ages 7 and 4 months. She graduated from North Mecklenburg High School and the Gainesville, Georgia Business College.
Okay.
She worked at Carolina's Medical Center as a patient discharge escort. Now, again, according to his confession, Wallace used his charm to chat with her for a while, and then he asked for a hug. And this time, Vanessa said, nope.
Yeah.
No, not hugging you.
Yeah.
So he asked for a drink. So she's like, okay. So she turns around and he brought out a pillowcase from under his shirt and choked her with it. He wanted her bank card and her code, her PIN number. And she gives him this PIN number. And again, he dragged Vanessa into the bedroom and he raped her. And again, after he was finished, he ordered her to get dressed and then he strangled her with this towel. And he leaves her apartment and walks down the street, hails a cab, gets out of the cab, goes straight to a bank machine. He couldn't take out any money with Vanessa's card because she'd given him the wrong PIN number.
Good for her.
So he did all that for nothing.
Yeah.
Vanessa Little Mack's body was found by her mother the next morning. Here comes Dr. Sullivan again. He determines the cause of death to be ligature strangulation. There was no report of the murder on the news that night. The investigation did not make any special note that Vanessa's sister worked at the same Taco Bell as Shauna Hawk or Audrey Spain.
Unbelievable.
2 more weeks pass. Henry's crack addiction was now the center of his life. He didn't get any money from his last victim, so he's still too broke to get high.
Right.
And maybe he thought that 2 weeks was long enough to wait before taking another victim because Nobody's saying anything. Sure. Nothing's been reported about any of these girls.
Yeah.
On March 8th, Henry Wallace went to the apartment complex of his friend Vernon Lamar Woods with the intention of robbing, raping, and murdering Woods' girlfriend, Brandy June Henderson. Mm-hmm. Brandy is born on November 21st, 1975 in Charlotte. She was a loving, friendly girl to everybody she met. She and her boyfriend once worked with Henry at the Golden Corral in 1993.
Wow.
Brandy had an infant son named Tyrese. Okay. Brandy wasn't home when Henry got there. And Lamar Woods answers the door, and he had not expected that.
Yeah.
He didn't expect Lamar to be home.
Yeah.
So Henry's all frustrated, and he's got to come up with a story. And he tells him, well, I'm leaving town for a little bit, and I just came by to say goodbye. And before leaving the apartment complex, he realizes, you know what? I know somebody else who lives in this apartment complex. Betty Jean Bauckham. She worked as the assistant manager with my girlfriend, Sadie McKnight, at Bojangles.
Okay.
And Henry's thinking, she's going to have a key and the combination to the safe at Bojangles.
Wow.
So he goes to her apartment door. When Betty answered the door, Henry told her he needed to use her phone. And Betty Jean, who was known as Susie to her friends and family, she's born on March 7th, 1970 in Laringburg, North Carolina, to Betty Bauckham White. Betty Jean had an adopted daughter, also Betty Jean, or BJ, who shared the same birthday as her adoptive mother.
Okay.
And they both just had this birthday together, and Betty Jean is 24 years old.
Okay.
So Henry shows up. He asks to use the phone, and she's more than willing to help her friend's boyfriend. And he pretended to look up a phone number until Betty turned her back, and then he grabbed her. He demanded her keys and the safe combination and the alarm code for Bojangles.
Wow.
And Betty resisted for over 30 minutes, refusing to give them to him.
Wow.
Bojangles, you had a good one.
Yep. Wow.
Finally, she surrendered the combination. Wallace stopped choking her, and Betty asked him, quote, why did you do that to me, end quote. Mm. And Henry said he was sick. He had hurt many people. And according to his confession, Betty stood up and told him, I forgive you. She says, you need help. You need help, Henry. I forgive you.
Wow.
Wallace grabbed her by the throat and pushed her to the floor. He dragged her to the bedroom and put a towel around her neck, choking her until she was almost unconscious. He took off her clothes and raped her. Afterwards, he ordered her to get dressed, demanded the money in her purse, and strangled her to death. He also took a gold chain from around her neck. Henry stole Betty's TV and her car. He sold the TV, bought crack with the money, and smoked it. And later, he returned to her apartment and took her VCR. He checked to make sure she was still dead, and he smoked there in the apartment.
That's cold.
Yeah. He used the money from the VCR and Betty's gold chain and money from her purse to buy crack cocaine.
Wow.
12 hours passed. There was no time for a police investigation between Betty's death and Henry's next murder. He went back to the same apartment complex that night, March 8th, knowing that his friend Vernon Woods would be at work and he could resume his original plan, the murder of Brandy June Henderson.
It's like a human smorgasbord.
Yeah. Wow. Pretending he had something to drop off for Vernon, Henry gained entry into the apartment. And again, he smooth talks Brandy until she feels relaxed. He asks for a drink and then he attacked her from behind. Now, many things went wrong for Henry during this murder. He demanded money from her. All she had in the house was a Pringles can filled with change. Mm. He ordered her into the bedroom and forced her to disrobe.
Wow.
According to Henry's confession, she begged him to let her hold her son, Tyrese. Mm. And he refused. She continued to beg until he finally relents. And Brandy is holding her baby son across her chest while Henry Wallace is raping her.
Jeez.
The baby is crying, so they move into the baby's room to keep it from crying. Wallace continues to rape Brandy, and when he's finished, he tells her to get dressed. She puts the baby back in his crib. Henry went into the bathroom, took a towel, wiped the apartment free of his fingerprints, and strangled her to death. The baby cries out. Tyrese is crying out. Henry panics. He tried to give the baby a pacifier. It didn't work. So he goes into the bathroom and gets a smaller towel, like a hand towel.
No.
And he tied it around the baby's neck tightly. And the baby, barely able to breathe, sputtered and choked, but stopped crying. And Henry took Brandy's TV, her stereo, and leaves.
Wow.
And he sells them for $175 and buys crack cocaine with the money.
Gee whiz.
Little Tyrese would survive.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
The police are scrambling now.
Yeah.
I mean, is it enough now? Both of these murders have happened in the exact same apartment complex.
Right.
Dr. Sullivan's back. He determined that the ligature strangulation was the cause of both of these deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because the Brandy murder followed by the Vanessa murder in only 2 weeks, somebody noticed that these two cases were similar.
They're all choking.
Yeah.
Gosh.
2 days after Brandy's murder, Sergeant McFadden, the head of the investigation, called a meeting of his detectives to compare notes. There's a grand idea.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and compare notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And only then did they learn that Betty Baucom had been killed in the same apartment complex as Brandy Henderson and that the method of Betty's murder matched Brandy's and Vanessa's.
Good Lord. They're just now discovering.
Just now discovering. I told you it's going to piss you off.
Gee whiz.
The detectives approached the families of the three victims, these three victims, and asked for a list of people that each woman might have let into their apartment.
Okay.
And Henry Wallace was on every single list.
Did they follow that up?
Yes.
Okay. Well, good for them.
The next day, March 11th, Betty's stolen car was recovered. All fingerprints had been wiped from the steering wheel and the gear shift, the handle, the seat, but not from the trunk. A handprint was taken and it matched
Henry
Wallace.
There you go.
McFadden ran his name to see if he had a sheet. Yeah, he's got a sheet.
It's a mile long.
He's got fingerprints. You found his fingerprints. He's got a rap sheet.
Yeah.
It contained burglaries, an armed rape, and an outstanding warrant for failing to appear on a larceny charge from a month ago.
Wow.
And a citywide manhunt starts up for Henry Wallace.
And not a minute too soon.
And not a minute too soon.
Jeez. Wow.
Meanwhile, the same day that they're figuring this out, Henry Wallace is murdering his final victim.
Mm.
Deborah Slaughter. Deborah Ann Slaughter was born on January 15, 1959 in Vero Beach, Florida. Her parents were Alfonso Slaughter and Lovey Williams.
Lovey.
She was a mother of an 18-year-old son, and Deborah used to work at Bojangles with Sadie McKnight, Henry's girlfriend.
Sure.
She had an infectious laugh and a wonderful sense of humor. Deborah also had a beautiful singing voice, and she sang with the church choir.
Nice.
Now, Henry knew that she smoked crack,
okay.
And he wanted to talk to her because he's thinking, I'm going to talk her into buying some crack with me.
Right.
And she looks at him and says, look it, I'm not buying crack. I need my money for rent.
Yeah.
And Henry asks her, well, can I have a drink? And when she turned around, he put the towel around her neck. Deborah accused him of murdering Betty and Brandy like he's choking her.
Wow.
And she's figuring it out while he's killing her.
Oh my gosh.
You killed Betty. You killed Brandy.
Wow.
Yeah. She knows as she's dying before the police do.
Oh my gosh.
Henry ordered her to perform oral sex on him. And she said, quote, I don't do that. You might as well go ahead and kill me, end quote.
Wow.
Henry tightened the towel and asked her if she wanted to change her mind. She refused again. He raped her. After he was done, he told her to get dressed. Henry knew Deborah well enough to know that she always kept a knife in her purse.
Mm.
He told her to empty it out, and he kicked the knife away and told her to give him everything in her wallet. Henry grabbed the knife, Deborah gave him $40, smacked him, and screamed for the police. And Wallace twisted the towel around her throat until she fell to the floor and started kicking really loud. And he tried to sit on her legs. He's trying to keep her quiet.
Sure.
Yeah, don't tip off the neighbors downstairs.
Yeah.
And at some point, he stuffed a sock into her mouth. He tied another towel around her neck, grabbed her knife, and stabbed her 38 times in the stomach and the chest.
Holy cow. Wow.
Henry took the money Deborah gave him and left. He returned a few hours later with a glass pipe and some rocks, some crack rocks. He smoked the pipe in her bathroom. She's dead. She's been stabbed.
Wow.
Yeah. And he goes back to her place to smoke.
This guy is just cold.
And when he's done, he grabbed a Chicago White Sox jacket, a baseball cap, and a butcher knife and left again. He threw all three items away after leaving the apartment.
Wow.
Then on March 13th, 1994, Henry Wallace is arrested after police find him hiding in the bathroom of a friend's apartment in East Charlotte. Henry had talked of leaving town that day and returning to his hometown of Barnwell.
Gotcha.
March 14th, 1994, after an all-night interrogation followed by an early morning prayer with police, Wallace began writing down the names of his victims.
Wow.
Police expected three or four. Wallace listed 10.
Gee whiz.
He confessed to all the murders, explaining in a recorded interview the details of each murder.
Wow.
He also confessed to two other murders committed before these 10. He told the officers present that he felt, quote, like a big burden has been lifted, end quote.
Well, good for him. Wow.
Yeah, better give your butt to the police, because Jesus has got your soul now, honey.
Yeah, wow.
On September 30th, 1996, jury selection begins in Charlotte for Henry Wallace's trial on 9 murder charges. The killings of Tashonda Bethia and Sharon Nance, his first two victims, are not included.
Okay.
Their families were not happy about that. I read an entire article about that.
I wonder why they weren't included.
I think just because the bodies were so, like, he dumped one at a dump and it was just a skeleton. The other one was in
water. So they couldn't really tie it.
He said that it was him, but
yeah.
Yeah. And the families aren't happy about that. And I get that.
Yeah.
When his trial rolls around on January 7th, 1997, a Mecklenburg County jury finds Henry Wallace guilty of 9 murders. Quote, Henry Wallace's life is full of holes. He was born into terrible circumstances, circumstances most of us can't relate to. For a while, he was able to overcome those circumstances. Then the darkness inside those holes overcame him. End quote. This is his attorney speaking.
Yeah.
On January 29th, 1997, Henry Wallace receives 9 death sentences.
Wow.
He has remained on death row in Central Prison in Raleigh for more than 26 years. While he was incarcerated, Henry got married on June 5th, 1998 to Rebecca Torajas, who had been a former nurse at the prison. The wedding ceremony took place next to the execution chamber.
Appropriately so.
And the manager of the death row unit was in attendance at the ceremony.
Jeez. Wow.
Henry Wallace has appealed his death sentence on a number of grounds, including his claims that his confessions, all 12 hours, were coerced and that his constitutional rights were violated by the investigating officers.
Wah.
Don't know how that's possible because they weren't investigating shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the fact that the police couldn't put any of these murders together has become quite a point of contention in the community in East Charlotte.
Yeah.
And most believe it was because the cases were never a priority.
Right.
Never a priority because these were young Black women.
Yep.
I think it was just incompetence, too, on top of it.
Exactly. That's it.
Henry Wallace still sits on death row in North Carolina Central Prison in Raleigh, waiting execution. He's been there for 26 years, which is of little comfort to the families of these women.
Yeah.
But that is the story of the Taco Bell Strangler. Hopefully you're not thinking about it when you roll up to get your Baja Blast and your pack of three tacos. Yep. But that's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners, the wait is over. If you're a reader or a fan of my Sex and Lies series, Book 10, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll is now available on Amazon. With a successful tour and 2 years of sobriety under his belt, rock star Noah Hart is ready to put his secrets and the past behind him. That is, until his former bandmates and business partners are murdered one by one, and suddenly he becomes the prime suspect. When FBI agent Louisa Hathaway is assigned to the case, no one, including her partner, is aware she carries her own secrets, including an undeniable infatuation with rock and roll's bad boy, Noah Hart. As the body count rises, Agent Hathaway is torn between unraveling the truth and falling for the man who might be the killer. Don't miss this new book, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, by me, Chris Calvert. Only on Amazon. Rock and roll will never die, but it might kill you.
Well, you know, I'm never going to look at a burrito the same way again.
That's why I said, when you pull up to Taco Bell, you're going to be like, Not Taco Bell's fault, though.
Man, oh man.
He was just going through. He had a very small circle of people. And let me tell you what, he was networking, but he was murdering as he was networking.
Wow. That's sad. Sad. Well, I'm glad he's put away for life. And hopefully justice will be done here.
Sitting around.
Eventually.
26 years.
Yeah. Well, let's go from the dark side to the stupid side with a little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right, number one. She went that away, then that away, then she went that away. Then, well, you get it. A woman in Somerset, Massachusetts was arrested for breaking and entering, but she was quickly caught thanks to her ankle bracelet. The one fitted with a GPS system that she had gotten from the police for being on probation from an earlier breaking and entering case.
So not puka shells around her.
Yeah.
Oh, my. That was very 80s. Puka shells around your ankle.
Yeah. So anyway. Okay. Number two. Idiot@jail.com. A German bank robber sent mocking emails to local police ridiculing their efforts to arrest him. First, he let them know that they had his age, build, and accent wrong. Then he corrected their announcement that he had escaped on foot. No. He'd gotten away in a getaway car.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, but the cops had the last word in, though, when they arrested him. The guy, a few hours later, they used his email to trace him. Yeah.
Bless his heart. I have no words.
I know.
Bless his heart.
All right. Number three, worst customer service ever.
Oh, I'm big on customer service. Yeah. So let's hear it.
Joseph Goetz's alleged attempt to rob a York, Pennsylvania bank met with some snags.
Okay.
Cops say the first teller he tried to rob, well, the teller fainted, and the next two had no more cash in their drawers. All right.
Oh, my gosh. So he's like, I'm here to rob you. And she's just like, boom, down.
Yeah, she passed out. And then the next two tellers, they had no cash on in their drawers.
That's honestly a really good tactic. Think about it.
Well, listen, Goetz was so fed up with it. He stormed out, threatening to write an angry and strongly worded letter to the bank.
I'm going to contact your board of directors. I can't even rob this place.
I love that. All right. Last but not least, number four. E.T. phone home.
Oh.
Yep. When Stephen Crane broke into a Ravelli Republic, that's in Montana, newsroom, he used the computers to watch porn and check Facebook.
Oh, well, there's that.
Yep. Then Crane doused the office with a fire extinguisher, took some candy, and left.
Wait. Hopefully he took the candy, then doused it in a fire extinguisher, but okay.
Well, he's not too bright, so maybe he did douse it and then took the candy. It wasn't difficult to find him. However, the police just followed the trail of stolen M&Ms that led to his sister's place across the way.
It's like E.T. with the Reese's Pieces.
It's exactly.
She's like picking them up and following.
I love that one.
Oh, art imitating life. Yeah. Or is it life imitating art?
Yeah. Yes, yes. So there you go.
That's great. I love that. It's, you know, I used to always have candy on my desk when I was working corporate job. Mm-hmm. I would have candy on my desk and people would always come in and see me.
Yeah.
And that's how I always knew what was going on,
yeah,
who was doing what,
absolutely,
where we were on projects, because they'd come in and be like, I just came in to get this little piece.
And you'd say, and by the way.
I bet you did. Yeah. By the way, how are we doing on XYZ? Yeah, they knew.
Yeah, they knew. Yeah. Well, bless their hearts.
Well, if you have a bless your heart, or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, like some guy who leaves a trail of M&Ms, go to hitchtohomicide.com. There's a pull-down menu. You can also suggest a case. We love that, mm-hmm, just like this case was suggested.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we have today. That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.